And welcome to the podcast Developing Expertise in Teaching in Higher Education. I'm Helen King and I've been working in educational development in the UK for over 20 years. I've had experience with national and international projects and initiatives, as well as being based in higher education institutions. I'm currently Deputy Director of the Academic Practice Directorate at the University of the West of England in Bristol. This podcast draws on my experience of working with teachers in higher education, of my own teaching and learning experiences, and for my research. A text version of this podcast, including the full literature references, is available on my blog at drhelenking.com. In this first episode, The Foundations of Expertise, I'm going to draw on the literature and consider how a generic model of expertise might be applied to the specific profession of teaching in higher education. My interest in the concept of expertise developed out of working with ideas around ways of thinking and practicing in the disciplines. A geoscientist by background, my early career was in geoscience education, and I was keen to better understand things like threshold concepts and decoding the disciplines as a way of supporting students to become geoscientists rather than just doing geoscience. This led me eventually, via the National Academy's book, How People Learn, to the literature on the nature of expertise, and how expertise is much more than just content knowledge and skills, and that it's possible to be an experienced non-expert in any field or profession. I was drawn to the notion of expertise as a refreshing alternative to the ever popular and yet elusive, in terms of definition, excellence. Being a fan of etymology, I enjoy the derivations of these two words. Excellence, as being outstanding, comes from the Latin excellere, with ex meaning out or beyond, celsus meaning lofty. Expertise, on the other hand, is all about process and comes from the Latin expertus, which is the past participle of experire, which means to try, and is also the etymological origin of experience and experiment. For me, as an educational developer with a passion for supporting colleagues in higher education to develop and improve their teaching, the difficulty with excellence is that it's self-defined. It's exclusive. Not everybody can be outstanding or above average. It's a point to be reached or a static road. Whereas expertise arises from deep foundations of research and literature, it's a dynamic and agile process that's potentially available to all who wish to access it. Before I introduce the generic characteristics of expertise, I just want to explain my use of terminology. I'm very deliberately using the noun expertise rather than expert. Expert is a common term that's used colloquially to mean someone who's very knowledgeable in a particular subject area, or highly proficient or elite at a particular skill. Often these are the people we see or hear in the media. In this usage, it can sometimes be easy to equate being an expert with being experienced. Whereas, as alluded to above, it is possible to be highly experienced and to not have the characteristics of expertise. The notion of expertise, as discussed in the extensive literature, embodies a number of other characteristics in addition to knowledge and skills. So what are the generic characteristics of expertise? I've categorised these characteristics into three dimensions. And Skovholt et al. Provide a really helpful synopsis of the first two in their brief history of expertise. Initial work around expertise identified the following commonalities across a range of fields, including chess, physics, football, and music. The first dimension is knowledge and skills. High performance is based on knowledge and skills developed through study and experience in a particular domain. The second dimension I've called ways of thinking and practicing. This includes pattern recognition, the perception of large, meaningful patterns in the domain of expertise, which results in the ability to perform skills faster than novices. It includes a problem-solving approach that's qualitatively different to that of novices. And it includes automation of skills brought about through many hours of practice, which can exhibit as an effortless grace or flow. The classic example of pattern recognition comes from Chase and Simon's research with chess masters. When asked to recall a chessboard configuration set by the researchers, chess masters exhibited superior recall compared with novices. However, this was only the case if the configuration was one that could actually feature in a real game of chess. If it was a made-up configuration that was not possible in chess, then the masters were not significantly better at recall than the novices. So the extensive experience in the domain of expertise enabled the absorption of a vast number of patterns. Chase and Simon's research revealed similar findings in other domains, leading them to conclude that expert performance, or expertise, in a domain requires huge amounts of knowledge and a pattern-based memory system that's been acquired through many years of experience. The difference in approaches to problem solving, I feel, is apparent in my own experience of problems within the realms of physics when I was an undergraduate student. My personal learning strategy was to memorise the particular equations related to a topic and then wheel them out for appropriate problems. And this served me well for all of my topic-specific theoretical exams, but failed me badly for the general physics exam, which could be about any topic and was usually based on real-life problems. As a novice, I would try to figure out what numbers I needed to plug into what equation. A more expert approach would be to step back, consider the nature of the problem first, and then develop a qualitative description using any known data to get a sense of the order of magnitude of the solution, and then apply the appropriate equations. A third element of what I've categorised as ways of thinking and practising is the idea of automation of skills that develops as a result of extensive experience or practice. This might be thought of as a kind of effortless grace or flow. Many of us experience this when driving a car. I can remember my early days as a novice driver being highly conscious of every move I had to make in manoeuvring my manual car. Checking my mirrors, turning on the indicators, checking my mirrors, touching the brakes, putting the clutch in, changing gear and so on. Now, after 32 years of driving, all of these things are automatic and I can do them whilst holding a conversation or listening to the radio and, of course, watching the road. So this brings us to the third dimension of expertise, intentional learning and development. It's clearly recognised that many hours of practice are important for the development and maintenance of expertise. And here by practice, we can mean rehearsal, but we can also mean experience in the sense of a sort of repetitive practice of a professional activity. And Schoen mentions this. He suggests that professional practitioners encounter similar situations again and again. However, simply clocking up hours of experience and practice is not enough to develop expertise. This approach simply means the practitioner becomes good at doing that particular thing in that particular way. I'm sure we all know teachers who are proud to claim to have taught in exactly the same way for many years, but we wouldn't necessarily consider them to have expertise. Expert practitioners continually engage in deliberate practice, according to Erickson, or progressive problem solving, as coined by Baryta and Scardamalia. They identify specific areas for improvement and work on these, drawing on feedback and other evidence to inform their practice. Baryta and Scardamalia also suggest that the automation of skills brought about through extensive experience frees up time and cognitive space to engage in a continued improvement in the domain. They compare the nature of experts with experienced non-experts and suggest that experienced non-experts tend to reduce problems to a known solution rather than exploring the problem in different ways, a bit like a fly repeatedly attempting to get through a closed window. Erickson et al. Also note this plateau of competence that's reached by many performers and professionals in a range of fields and industries. Only a very few seem to continue to develop, improve, and reach higher levels of performance. A personal example of this is in learning to play musical instruments. I had piano lessons from a young age, and although I wasn't particularly dedicated in my practice, I slowly progressed up through the grades. Now I play purely for myself and not for progression or performance. I play the pieces I know, and when I get to a section I'm not so good at, I bumble through it or even skip it entirely. And so I've reached a plateau in my playing skill. If I want to improve, I can engage in deliberate practice. I can rely on my automatic skills, such as being able to recite, read music, and really focus on those sections I have difficulty with. But generally, I choose not to. I'm quite happy with the level of competence I've reached and have no desire to perform at a higher level on that instrument. For me, however, playing the banjo is a whole different ballgame. I started learning in October 2017 with the intention of applying what I know about expertise in deliberate practice. And I'm already hearing and feeling that continuous improvement. Though I'm not sure how popular the intense repetition of chords and phrases is with my household and neighbours. Interestingly, when I had piano lessons, the nature of practice was never really discussed. So I didn't really know how to do it, except to keep playing things over and over. My experience with my banjo teacher and members of the international bluegrass music community is very different, where approaches to practice are an explicit part of the learning process. This third dimension of expertise, intentional learning and development, I think is summarised quite neatly in Perkins' suggestion that expertise is a process of proactive competence. So the characteristics of expertise in teaching in higher education. How do these three dimensions manifest themselves in the profession of teaching in higher education? I've based the following suggestions on my observations of highly effective teachers in higher education, on self-reflections of my own practice, discussions with participants at various educational development conferences, and also on research that I've undertaken with 9 UK National Teaching Fellows, using their award as a proxy for expertise. I present these very briefly below, and we'll be exploring each of them in considerably more depth throughout this series of podcasts. So, dimension 1, knowledge and skills. I've equated the knowledge and skills required to teach in higher education with Shulman's idea of pedagogical content knowledge. This is the interaction of knowledge and skills from both the subject area and from pedagogy, or the science, art and skill of teaching. And it's developed through experience, study and an understanding of good pedagogical practice. Maybe what makes higher education different from other levels of education is that teachers might experience a kind of identity wobble board with their multiple roles as subject specialists, researchers, professional practitioners, administrators, and teachers all interacting or perhaps bumping up against each other within this pedagogical content knowledge. An expertise approach might be one that finds a way to resolve this and conceptualise one's role as an integrated whole. Dimension 2, ways of thinking and practicing. Now I've characterised this as artistry of teaching. This is perhaps the least explored aspect of teaching within a higher education context. What is going on within the teacher when they practice their craft? What is the problem solving, pattern recognition, automation of skills which enable flow? Now I characterise this as artistry after Schoen. It's those often intangible characteristics, reflection in action, intuition, improvisation in the classroom, authenticity, rapport, which you can recognise in expert teachers compared with novices or experienced non-experts. These are the human elements and often the ones most neglected when considering what support newer teachers might need. Whilst they may emerge from experience, I think they can also be nurtured through mentoring and professional development. Schoen describes competence as the ability to follow routines and respond to known situations, but teaching is rarely routine. As Schoen says, let us search instead for an epistemology of practice implicit in the artistic, intuitive processes which some practitioners bring to situations of uncertainty, instability, uniqueness, and value conflict. So to continue the music analogy, teaching is not like being in a note-perfect string quartet, playing in front of a quiet, respectful audience in a well-managed auditorium. It's much more like being part of a jazz band, playing tunes we know, but improvising, riffing off of each other and the audience in a late-night bar. In the third dimension of expertise, intentional learning and development. What does this look like for teaching in higher education? If we ask someone what they do for professional development, they're likely to come up with a list of activities. Maybe they did a PG cert, attending workshops or reading the literature. Sometimes what's harder for them to articulate, and I've seen this in many applications for Higher Education Academy fellowships and excellence awards, they find it harder to articulate how these types of activities have informed or impacted on their teaching. In my semi-structured interviews with 9 National Teaching Fellows, we explored how they learnt to teach and how they developed their teaching. Their descriptions fitted with the models of deliberate practice and progressive problem solving, and it was particularly striking that they focused their answers on how their teaching evolved, rather than on the particular professional development activities they did to learn and develop. Of course, the evolution of their teaching was informed by evidence from various activities, including conversations with colleagues, workshops, pedagogic research and evaluation, the literature, and so on. But they talked about it as the story of their teaching journey. So what came across was that professional development was actually an integral part of their teaching, rather than an add-on activity. So we might think about intentional learning and development for teaching in higher education as a self-determined and purposeful process of evolving one's teaching, which is informed by evidence gathered from a range of activities. And this intentional learning and development is really important, particularly, as noted before, because expertise is domain-specific. How many of us have felt confident and expert as teachers with one cohort of students, only to find things work very differently with another? Or perhaps we're asked to teach a topic outside of our specialism, or suddenly we have to teach online after years of being in a real classroom. We become and feel like a novice again. However, we're not starting from scratch. If we're used to this evidence-informed approach to evolving our teaching, we will already have the tools to develop our expertise in a different direction. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, I'll be discussing deliberate practice, how this relates to teaching in higher education, and how you might apply it to improve your teaching. Don't forget, for a text version of this podcast, including references to the literature, head over to my blog at drhelenking.com.